The Wintrust Business Lunch with Elise Glink, who's been taking a closer look at the deal the president has struck with the speaker. Still remains to be seen if the Congress agrees with what they've come up with. Elise is the co-host of This Week in Wealth on WGN Radio with Tom Fortino, Sunday mornings at 7. And she is the owner of Think Glink Media. Visit thinkglink.com. Hi, Elise.
Hey, John.
What are the details that jump out at you in this proposal?
Well, I think the biggest one is that they're trying to push this, or kick the can, let's use the vernacular, kick the can, past the 2024 election. So the debt ceiling right now is at $31.4 trillion, and it would be suspended until January 1st, 2025, and then the Treasury Department could use extraordinary measures to pay the bills. January 2025 is when we would have a new, possibly new president, but for sure we'd get some new members of Congress because they always shift around and people have said they're retiring. Some people we wish they would retire. I don't know. Anyway, it'll push it all past that election. And then that would allow everybody sort of currently to talk about whether or not they're going to support what it says. But what's interesting, John, is that already I think 18 or 20 Republicans have said they will not support this. So we'll have to see how that it all plays out.
Can you talk about some of the specifics of the proposal?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of it is about keeping in place where we are today or rolling back just a little bit. The Republicans wanted to roll back quite a lot. The Democrats wanted to limit going forward. So, for example, in fiscal year 2024, which starts, I think, the middle of this year, it limits military spending to $886 billion, non-military discretionary spending to $704 billion. And in the fiscal year 2025, so that would start middle of next year, those numbers would rise pretty much not at all. So the 886 would go to $895 billion, and the $704 billion goes to $711. Now, that's not to say that an increase of $7 billion isn't real money. I wish I had it. It would be very real to me. But in terms of what we spend in this country, it's considered to be par or the same.
And the administration says that the non-military spending would be flat, that there would not be any appreciable increases, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Same sort of thing. It would be virtually about the same. What's meaningful here, though, is to remember that as all of us are experiencing inflation, the government experiences it as well. So you go to the grocery store and tomatoes cost, oh, let's just say 22% more than they did last year. That's a 22% increase. So if you wanted to keep your tomato purchases the same next year, you'd have to spend 22% more, let's just say. And so the government goes to buy stuff next year, and they would also expect to spend whatever the inflation has been for a particular item, let's say new toilets, right? And so they may have to spend an extra, I don't know, 15, 20%. I'm making that number up, but just as an explanation, they would have to spend more, but they don't get to. So by holding the line, what they're actually doing is putting in a decrease in the budget because they simply can't buy as much of the same things as they need with the amount of money they have.
Talking to Elise Glink from Think Glink Media. By the way, you were talking about how the government needs to keep track with inflation, right? So if inflation goes up 3%, increasing the budget 3% is keeping even, right?
Yeah, it would be keeping even, and that's pretty much what they've done. But it's, you know, basically that's only for military spending. For IRS spending, which last year Congress voted, or I guess it's earlier, I don't remember when they did it, I think it was last year, they voted $80 billion to upgrade tax enforcement and to upgrade computer systems. Well, The new deal would cut $21 billion of that, so they would claw back or just take out about a quarter of what the IRS had planned to use for a decade. And so the Biden administration said, that's okay. We weren't going to, that won't affect our near-term plans to upgrade the technology. Clearly, it's, you know, that was money that was supposed to be spent over 10 years. The COVID-19
I want to go back to that point, though.
Yeah,
so,
go ahead.
I don't understand that. That is one of the revenue positive things, I thought. Build Back Better was supposed to be funded in part by money that would be collected from taxpayers, because there would be more and more efficient IRS agents making sure that people are paying their fair share. I don't like the IRS knocking on my door either, but I think if you have an obligation, you should pay it. And if the IRS is more efficient or better able to capture money that people aren't paying, I say they should pay. I'm not threatened by more money spent on IRS. Has anybody tried to call the IRS and get an answer? Wouldn't it be nice if that agency was more efficient? So now they said, this just strikes me as very populist. Oh, we're not going to do that. Well, we by one-fourth have cut the funding for more IRS agents. I don't think we benefit from that. Let's go back to Elise Glink, already in progress.
Yeah, right. No, John, I completely agree with you. This is from the Republicans. They do not want people getting, I don't know if they don't want people
harassed.
Paying tax.
They don't want them harassed on your ASS. That's what they don't want.
They also want tax cuts. So this was the deal. They're not going to get tax cuts, I guess, in this, but they are going to get 25% of the cash back to be able to apply elsewhere. I don't know what to say about that. I think everybody should pay the taxes that they owe. You shouldn't pay
right.
any more. You shouldn't pay less. You should pay what you owe. But
talk to me about clawing back some of the money that was sent out to, I guess, municipalities or states for COVID.
That's right. So now that the COVID-19 pandemic is officially over, according to the government, not if you're sick, obviously, it's still going on for you, or you have long COVID for you too, but for everybody else, it's over. And so there's about $30 billion that Congress had passed on to the states and even further down the chain to battle the pandemic. They're going to take that back and they're going to apply it elsewhere. And the big deal for Republicans was tightening work requirements for federal aid, primarily raising the age of people who must work in order to receive food aid through the SNAP program. That's the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. So now if you're able-bodied and low income and you want to get assistance from SNAP, now you can be up to 54, and I think it used to be the age was 49, to work and receive those benefits. And also, you can only receive benefits for 3 months within a 3-year period unless you're working. So there is a break. You would get access for 3 months if you're not working and then you have to go to work. But veterans, homeless people, and young people leaving foster care will not be required to get a job immediately, and they'll be continued to covered with the SNAP program. So there was definitely some give and take there.
Any last observations from you about this proposal?
I just don't know how this is going to pass, John. I'd like to think that there were enough Republicans and Democrats on both sides willing to put in and give, and there was a fair amount of give and take, as any budget discussion has. But there are already some hardline Republicans saying they're not giving in, that any deal is a deal not worth taking. They're using harsher language than that, but they just don't seem like they're willing. They're willing to let the government fall and crash and burn simply to make a point, I suppose. And I don't know that they fully understand the repercussions. And I'm not saying I do, because I've never seen this happen, that we don't pay our bills. And I don't want to see what happens. I know for sure the stock market is not going to like it.
Well, we haven't not paid them yet, and I believe the Congress is going to pass this. And this will be an interesting test of Kevin McCarthy's leadership then. You want to be Speaker of the House, this is what you get. And he made a deal with that right wing of his party. But I will bet you a cheese sandwich. I don't know why I said cheese sandwich.
That, I like cheese sandwiches, John.
Okay,
go
I'll
with
bet
that.
You a cheese sandwich that this will get done by June 5th. How about that?
I think you're right. I think it will. I think it will be the there will be enough scary talk around about what will happen if they don't get there that I think they'll all get there as well. I just wish it were a little less contentious and we all felt like we were coming together to build something. But such is life in the big world of politics.
ThinkGlink.com is her website. That's Elise Glink. She's the owner of ThinkGlink Media and Best Money Moves. Listen for her with Tom Fortino on This Week in Wealth, Sunday mornings at 7. All right, Elise, let's talk next Monday, I suppose. Huh? It's Tuesday today, but we'll visit again.
That sounds great, John. Thank you.
Here's Ron Zaslow, who is going to talk to us not so much about the business world as the business of pickleball. He is the owner of the Chicago Slice professional pickleball team. Did you know we have a pickleball team? We do. And Chicago Slice makes sense, I think. Ron, you're on. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Why the name Slice?
So Chicago Slice, we thought was a clever double entendre, meaning, of course, the slice shot that is popular in tennis and pickleball. And, of course, from Chicago being known for its Chicago pizza. So we decided to incorporate both of those into the name Chicago Slice.
You know, when I saw that on the mascot or the logo with the slice of pizza, I thought, why hasn't somebody picked this name before? That's very Chicago.
Indeed. We thought it was a great one, and again, works really well with both the sport and the city.
How long have we had a team in Chicago, a pickleball team?
We were awarded the expansion team last October, so a few months now. This is our first full year, and I'm proud to say of the 24 teams, we currently are in fourth place with another big tournament coming up in the middle of June out in San Clemente, California.
Where do you play your home games?
Home games are yet to be decided in Chicagoland. Chicagoland has a number of different pickleball projects going on right now. And once those facilities are ready, we will be naming our official home of Chicago Slice. The way the tournaments are working right now for this year, there are six major tournaments in key cities around the country. All 24 teams travel to those locations and play the matches. And as I said, next year they're hoping to get some more regional action as well.
How many players on a team?
Four players on each team. Two men, two women. A match consists of a men's doubles, a women's doubles, and then two mixed doubles. And then if the score is tied 2-2 after that, they go to a really exciting single shootout.
So Chicago is represented by four athletes then?
Correct.
And do I know their names? Are these household names in the pickleball world, or are they?
They're going to be household names. They're great players for sure. The way the league is set up is that it's almost like a fantasy football draft. So each year we're able to draft a new team to represent Chicago Slice, and those players will play for us for the full year, and then at the end of the year we'll redraft again. And the idea of doing it that way, I think very cleverly, the league said there's so many people that are unknown in pickleball, and instead of having one great athlete spend 5-10 years in one city, that would be a chance for the city to see all the great players rotate throughout each year.
So Susanna Barr, I'm reading these names now, right? Emily Ackerman,
yep.
Connor Garnett, and Ryler DeHart are the players representing Chicago right now.
Correct. Those are the four that we were lucky enough to draft. And as I said, to be fourth place out of 24 teams is pretty amazing. Great players. They came together well. And as excited as I am to have them, we only have them for a little longer. And then going into next year, we'll have a chance to draft a new squad.
And then we'll root against them. So Ron Zaslow's 35 capital. And then it says here, am I reading this correctly, that the other co-owners of the team are Heidi Klum, Chris Everett, that list, that these are your co-owners?
Yes. These are my co-owners. So when we put together the team, I wanted a great combination of strong business leaders in Chicago, of which we have many, and then also some great stars and celebs that can help us get the word out about Major League Pickleball and Chicago Slice in particular. So we were able to put together a fairly large investment group that all came in. These are people, as I said, who not only have great skills to offer our team, but also are big pickleball fans. And that was one of the biggest parts. We didn't want people to just come in and try to make money. We wanted people to come in that were going to have a lot of fun with the sport of pickleball.
Tom Ricketts, David Justice, Chris Everett, Lindsay Davenport. I mentioned Heidi Klum, Tracy Austin. These are all tennis greats.
T.D. Fernandez, yep. All four of them have won, I believe, multiple Grand Slam events. So incredibly strong on the professional tennis side, and they're all become pickle fans, and of course are giving us great guidance as we try to follow a lot of what tennis was able to accomplish in the last 50 years.
So you are a challenge level league. What does that mean?
Challenge level means similar to soccer in Europe. There's a two-league system, a Premier League and a Challenger League. For the first 6 months, we were in the Challenger, and then going into the second 6 months of the year, we'll be in the Premier. So for the first year, all 24 teams will get 6 months in both leagues, and then the top 12 will start next year as, you know, more full-time in whichever league that you're going to be in. So, again, our goal this year was to put together 12 great months, finish in the top 12. We're hanging in fourth, so we're feeling good about it, and then we will start in the Premier League moving forward.
How many people attend these matches?
So far, we've seen it grow every single tournament. So over the course of the weekend, you can have upwards toward 5,000 to 8,000 people. It is being streamed. CBS does some nice coverage. ESPN, YouTube has a channel dedicated toward it. So there's great chances, even if you don't have a chance to get out and see it live, to follow it on streaming or TV.
And it's singles and doubles? You described the play a moment ago.
Right, exactly. It's mostly doubles, but it goes to a singles format, single shootout format for tie breaks.
Got it. And how many volleys would you typically have in the doubles format then?
It really depends. The women have longer volleys than the men, but in either of them, it can go 10, 12, 15 times back and forth. And it's amazing to see when they're hitting back and forth from the baseline. But when they get moved close to net, and they're pounding it back and forth, you'll never see a sport with better hand-eye movement and coordination. It's just amazing to watch these pros do their craft.
Yeah. I'm trying to imagine if it more mimics, say, the French in tennis, where you have long volleys, or the U.S. Open, where it's serve and volley. You know, it might be three shots, and the point is over.
Yeah, now one of the cool things about pickleball is it's set up to have longer volleys. So there's restrictions on things you can do on your serve, so it really keeps it in play, and it gets to the ground stroke part much more quickly than tennis does. You might see an ace or two over the course of an entire tournament, but you don't see a lot of them. So that means the ball's in play, and the points are fun and long and amazingly athletic.
So do you play?
I do play. Not quite at that level, but I'm working at it.
But I would imagine I could see how you would be interested in, because you're interested in it. But is this going to be a money-making venture for you the way I would invest in any other professional team?
I think absolutely is the answer. There's two sides of pickleball that we're invested in at 35 Capital. We have a paddle company called ProXR Paddle. Have to get that plug in there. Chicago-made paddles. And for that, into the amateur markets and selling shoes and clothing and paddles and hats and balls and all that stuff, already a great winner as the sport continues to grow at ridiculous levels. The professional side is the other track, and that is the question is, will people be excited by it, want to watch it, be part of it, eventually gamble on it, because gambling is going to be a big part of it as well. And so far, the results have been way better than expected. And we've got a long way to go to say we're a top four sport, for sure, we get that. But the accomplishments of Major League Pickleball in the last 2 years has just been a stunning success.
I know the difference between a good golf club and a bad golf club, or a good tennis racket and a bad tennis racket, can be determinative.
Absolutely.
Is that the case in pickleball as well, or is it pretty much all the same?
No, there's big differences, and it's not just, you know, that they're priced differently, but in some of the more advanced paddles that the pros are going to be using, it's using super high-end materials, raw carbons, and different materials that make it perform better. The pros, of course, are looking for that magical combination of power and control and spin, and different materials will play differently. And so some of those high-end paddles will retail $220 to $250 a paddle. There's also ones out in the market for $100 that are very usable for the amateurs and for those looking to get into the sport and not spend a lot of money until they know that they love it. And those paddles play very well as well. But similar, as you said, you know, the professionals require a lot more of the product and the performance of the product. And companies like ours are able to provide that.
My producer just handed me this note. On October 28th, while competing for the Houston Old Stars, do you know where I'm going with this?
I think I do, yes.
Of the 55-plus Cactus Division at this year's MSBL. What does MSBL stand for?
That's the Men's Senior Baseball League. That's all of us who love baseball and didn't quit it when we got out of college and continued to play.
In that league's World Series, hurler Ron Zaslow, that would be you, threw an MSBL record 12-inning complete game victory at the Peoria Stadium as his Old Stars defeated the Utah Braves 12-11. Well, we buried the lead here now, didn't we, Ron?
That was the most exciting part of it, that's for sure. Or I should say that was the part I enjoyed the most.
Yeah, I know you had an unfortunate incident after that, but it sounds like everything's okay, huh?
It did, and thank you for bringing it up. And yes, unfortunately, I was in leaving the stadium. I got in a horrible crash. A truck came over into our lane and smushed me pretty good. But about a year and a half of rehab later, I am out. I am both pitching again and playing pickleball. So for an unlucky event, things turned out pretty darn lucky for me.
Ron, good luck to you. Boy, you're in the right place at the right time. If I bring up pickleball on the radio, I get phone calls, let me tell you. So if we can promote it and keep people dialed in, let us know how, okay?
We love it. And please, all followers and listeners, please check us out, social media. Shy Slice will get you to the website about Chicago Slice. But we're on Instagram and Twitter and everything else. So please follow us and watch a match and come out and play pickleball. It's awesome.
Good luck, Ron. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Have a good day.
ChicagoSlice.com. That's our professional pickleball team. More business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago White Sox and Bulls owner Jerry Reinsdorf has taken majority control of the multi-platform sports network Stadium. Front Office Sports reports he acquired that portion of the company from Sinclair Broadcast Group with the terms undisclosed. Reinsdorf helped create the network in 2017. The report says large-scale moves are expected by Stadium under the new ownership structure and will come ahead of next year's expiration of regional rights deals for the Bulls, White Sox, and Blackhawks with NBC Sports Chicago. The Lab Embedded Entrepreneur Program Demo Day in Chicago is coming on June 7th. Chicago Inno says 20 startups have been announced for the program. They'll showcase several technologies, including renewable and clean energy, batteries, and hydrogen fuel cells. Programs connect entrepreneurs with resources at U.S. Department of Energy National Labs. It's helped startups raise more than $1 billion in funding and investment since it began in 2015. I'm Steve Brzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of food now. Here's Steve Alexander.
Thank you, and let's begin on our food calendar, where today is National Mint Julep Day. Mix together corn whiskey, water, sugar, and a mint leaf. It is a Southern classic. Speaking of Southern classics...
Hi, it's Chef Art Smith.
Yes, perhaps Chicago's most famous chef.
People know me as the King of Comfort.
Who is going to talk about his mother and grandmother after I thank the Chevy Silverado HD for sponsoring us today. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, you may know Chef Art Smith for his connection to Oprah or for his restaurants Q and Blue Door.
Named after Oprah's farm in Indiana.
And for his famous fried chicken, which goes way back in his family.
Grandmother, she ran a boarding house and would feed amazing lunches and dinners, and they always included lots of biscuits and lots of fried chicken.
And you may know him as Chef to the Stars.
I cooked for 5 presidents, a couple of royals, Holy Man, and Galaxy of Stars.
But all of that notoriety and wealth does not matter a lick when it comes to Alzheimer's.
Alzheimer's has been a part of my family for a long time.
His great aunt died of Alzheimer's.
She was an amazing woman. She was one of the first women on television. She was on Steve Allen's show, and Alzheimer's robbed her of all that.
And her sister, Art's grandmother.
It took her, too.
And Art's mother?
You know, she was the most gorgeous, sweetest tax collector you've ever met.
But in her 70s,
she started getting forgetful, and I was fearful. And she developed, you know, started developing the illness.
Which brings us to the reason the chef is with us today.
When you've lost 3 great women in your life that you loved and adored, how could you not want to do your best to try to bring awareness to it?
So, Thursday night at his restaurant on Navy Pier.
Reunion.
He'll be serving up the classics.
And we're going to have my famous deviled eggs. We're going to have my famous fried chicken we've been talking about.
And a lot more.
This will be lovely.
Tickets are $100.
And 50% of the proceeds will be donated to the Alzheimer's Association of Illinois chapter.
To buy yours, go to eventbrite.com and search for Art's name. And one more thing from the chef, when it comes to family, especially those who are gone.
Food is like a time capsule. And just remember, you can always visit them through food.
God bless. Thank you.
I'm Steve Alexander, and that's the business of food and good on 720 WGN.
So here's what I was just kind of chuckling about. I think this is just such a good idea. Kelsey Ryan joins us, the Director of Public Relations at the Museum of Science and Industry. Kelsey, you're on WGN. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, John?
Give me some highlights. I'm good, thanks, for MSI this summer.
Yeah, well, there's a lot going on this summer, both for kids and the kids at heart, so us adults. So there's a whole range of things that people can do. One thing that we're really excited to bring back this summer is adult-focused events, so events where the kids can't come, but you can enjoy perhaps an adult beverage while exploring different areas of the museum. So there's a whole range of opportunities to do this summer. If you go to our website, you can learn a bit more about this. But for example, in July, we have an event called Nightlife of Pompeii. It's a 21-plus event, so you have to be 21 and older to attend. But in general, you can experience the museum and our exhibit that we have for the year. It's called Pompeii, the Exhibition, in a unique way without kids around, no chaperones, no bagged lunches, none of that, just adult fun. And you'll get to experience the museum in a unique way. So there's a whole bunch of exhibits events and exhibits that people can explore, but a lot of adult events going on this summer as well.
I'm glad that's still there and it's going to be there for, when does the Pompeii exhibit end?
So it goes through September 4th of this year, and it is, if those that might be unfamiliar with it, the Pompeii exhibition tells the tale of the ancient city of Pompeii before and after it was catastrophically ruined by the eruption of Mount Vesuvius. So it was 79 AD to be exact, so thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
This city existed and people lived there, and not a lot of people knew about it until it was rediscovered 250 years ago. So when you walk through the exhibit itself, you'll get a feel for the people of Pompeii, what they did in their spare time, how they cooked. Shockingly, their pans are very similar to the pans that we use today. So it's a really interesting exploration into the people of Pompeii. And then in the second half of the exhibit, you get to learn a bit more about the volcano and what exactly devastated this city from a scientific standpoint.
Just give me some things for the kids, though. So I like that you have, you know, some adult activities there where it's for the over 21 set, but give me something for younger then.
So there's a bunch of opportunities. Of course, you know, MSI is the number one field trip destination for kids in Illinois. So there's, you know, as kids are getting out of school, there's a bunch of opportunities still to keep learning. So we have a variety of different camps, most which start around July 10th, and they last through the beginning of August. Some are a day-long event, some are week-long. So if you go to our website, you can find out a bit more about that. But for example, one of them, we have two different age groups. For example, so one is called a Fab Lab summer camp, and then there's a Fab Lab Junior summer camp. Both are really interesting, unique camps that you can't really find in many other places, but it basically combines science and art and creativity, where kids will come in and they'll explore 3D printing, experiment with laser cutting, and learn about design with the museum's vinyl cutter. And this is all happening within our Wanger Family Fab Lab. So it's a really unique opportunity to experience the Fab Lab in a really immersive way. Lots of educators around to help kids learn, too.
We all know it's a great hands-on place, and that sounds like a really good program. Kelsey Ryan is the Director of Public Relations, the Museum of Science and Industry. MSI Chicago, of course, is the website, msichicago.org. Let's have a great summer, and you'll see me at one of those. I'm going to buy tickets for the Pompeii exhibit.
Love to hear that.
I will see you soon. Thank you, Kelsey.
Thank you for having me.